And we're back. Welcome to Deep Thinking, the motorcycle road racing podcast that answers the question, why can't you weld steel and aluminum together? He's Ed Sorbo.
Two peanuts walked into a room. One was salted.
One was salted. One was not.
I just said one was salted. This is show number 70.
We forgot the Hayden 69 story. We talked about it after we got done with episode 69. The number 69 didn't come from Nikki. It came from Earl. And it came from Earl's early, his racing career when he crashed so much. He said he wanted, whether the bike was right side up or upside down, he wanted the ambulance crew to know who it was.
I cannot verify that story.
I can't verify it either. But
that story's been used on a lot of people.
The entertainment value is what matters here. Okay? It's just like that, whatchamacallit, the letters to the editor thing in Road Racing World. Delusional rantings of conspiracy theorists are judged based on the entertainment value.
Speaking of conspiracy theorists, who are you?
Oh, I'm Michael Gugis. You can read me at motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. You'll be able to find new pictures fairly soon at motorbikeroadracing.smugmug.com. And you can find me elbow down and spinning the rear wheel at the apex of a corner near you. It's just silent.
I got that joke about the peanut.
What about it?
From the bloopers reel from Indy Neidell's show, The Great War.
Who's Indy
Which
Neidell?
Is on YouTube. He's an historian, actor, and they're doing a YouTube video every week since the 100-year anniversary of World War I.
Okay.
On the actual week, 100 years past, they review
what
happened in the war. So it's going to take like 4 years to watch, you know, to have the whole thing happen. And it's really good because he talks a lot about the stupidity of the waste of that war. And, you know, where most stuff you read about wars is all about glory and all that kind of wonderful stuff. And it's actually not true.
So he threw in a peanut joke?
It was on the bloopers reel. It was pretty funny.
Okay.
And I'm Ed Sorbo, and you can find me at le-suspension.com.
Ed can twist your knobs.
A suspension genius.
A media conglomerate.
Also, well, yeah, that too. Also, somebody who can remember lessons from the past.
Right.
So you go to my blog page and you read the most recent post with the pictures of the two tachometers, and you'll find out what I'm talking about.
What is it about?
Well, you have to go to le-suspension.com, click on the blog page, and then click on the picture of the two tachometers.
Okay.
Okay, so...
I've been a little busy. By the way,
I wasn't suggesting that you go to it.
I need to go there. I found out this morning, you and I have talked about this. What's going to happen in 20 years when everybody is A, old, and B, heavily tattooed?
Well, there's new people being born all the time.
Right.
So they won't all be old and tattooed.
But
some will be brand new and untattooed.
Oh, yeah. Well, apparently it's only taken like days before they start tatting them. But I was out Easter brunch with my family this morning at some high-end, really nice golf course that the, whatchamacallit, the...
golf courses are just a waste of runoff room.
Oh, believe me. But all these people in there, dressed in their Easter finest, sleeveless dresses, tatted, and saggy. It's not good, Ed. It's not good. I fear for the future of humanity.
You know, you're all going to get old and saggy, and your injuries are going to be cumulative.
Right.
So you can have injuries from racing, or you can have injuries from tats. It's up to you.
No, it's...
Hey, so what's this thing about the art of reading the timing screen?
Oh,
because it's just numbers and letters, you know.
Yes, but...
You read them just like a book.
Ah, but it's different, Ed. When did I see this? I was watching...
this is an old...
Oh, right, no, I was paying attention to qualifying World Superbike, one of the rounds this year. And I was not watching... I hadn't downloaded it. I wasn't watching it live. But I was watching live timing and scoring. And their timing and scoring is awesome. Sector times, color-coded to show whether a rider is on a personal best... whether they're on a best of the session, where they're likely to move up to if they continue with this pace. And it was like, I recently rewatched The Matrix. It's like reading The Matrix. You don't see the buildings and the agents.
All the Matrix people are right now going, see, it's true.
True, exactly, yeah. Right? It's just, and you could, and the joy of it is that if you learn the art of reading it, it's like watching the whole thing all at once. It's wonderful. I really enjoy doing that, and I think it's kind of a lost skill. The problem with video is that it's too literal. There's no imagination left. There's none of that when you used to listen to a race on the radio and you'd have to use your mind to draw the pictures to see what was happening. Now it's drawn for us.
You know, I don't think there's ever been a radio live radio show of racing where calling it like there was a football game or a baseball game.
That's how I experienced the Indy 500 for the first several years of my life.
So what does the guy say?
Literally.
They're turning left.
Yeah, exactly.
Left so again.
So-and-so is in the
straight
lead.
Straight away.
So-and-so is coming left. Back. Left. You know, and this is why those...
They went left into the pits.
This is why those announcers were
they
saying
They went left out of
like,
the pits.
The red bike has passed the blue bike, because that's all they could freaking see. That's all they could think about.
When my Moto GP pass was getting ready to expire last year.
Mm-hmm.
They have this little offer that says, well, if you buy now for the regular yearly price, you get automatically upgraded to multi-screen.
Ooh.
So I forgot about that when I watched the first race. But now I've been going back and watching Qatar again with the multi-screen, with all the different, you can pick, you know, helicopter view.
Okay.
You know, you can have up to four different screens. One of them can be the timing screens, whatever you want. It's too much information. You got to watch it later on. But it's really cool to know that the helicopter view is actually there the whole race.
Yeah.
You know, they only ever show little bits of it. And you're like, I want to see more of that. Because you can see the gap changing.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And remember, folks, when the gap is changing, the bikes always appear to get closer together going into the corner and spread out coming out. That's simply because the rider in front is braking earlier in time than the rider in the rear. He's braking while the other guy's still at the last little bit of top of sixth gear because he hasn't got to the braking marker point. So while the first rider is slowing, the other guy's still accelerating, it looks like, oh wow, he's catching him on the brakes. He's not. You got to look at the gap. You got to time the gap between the two bikes,
mm-hmm.
and then time it again on the next straightaway to see if there was any gain
or not. Any change, right? It's all about the time.
So Moto America 600 entries.
They're gone. They're done.
I wouldn't say the term "done" does not have the meaning that you're trying to use.
Well, okay.
They had to combine the two 600 classes because there's less people entering,
and
you have too few guys on the track.
And it's the super. And it's interesting because it's the super sport version.
Well, the thing is that the thing of running your super sport 1000 R1 with the super bikes is such a good deal. The guys are going, I'm not going to do this 600 thing again. I'll get an R1.
And just go out there with the super bikes.
Exactly. So and I haven't counted the numbers. But just because it's like the total number of entries is what you want to look at. If classes are going to change. I mean, you talked about that in your most recent blog mm-hmm. post about the 600 class not working out in
motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com.
And you're absolutely correct. Well, what was interesting, though, to me, was the technical configuration of the group of bikes that were disappearing. And it's the built 600s that are going away.
Well, what I liked about that was that Moto America is paying attention to their entries and going, we got a problem here. We need to come up with a solution.
And they've done
instead
something.
Of ignoring it and going, hey, there's only four bikes on the grid, right? Way better. And that's the reality. You have a business and you got to pay attention to what your customers want and you got to adjust things for that. But it does speak to the greater question, which is, you know, what classes do people want to race in? What classes do advertisers want to advertise in? Mm-hmm. Where is the market, right? What works for your fantasy as a first-year novice club racer is not going to be the same as what the factory teams want.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's on a different thing. So, you know, that's a reason why... Another reason why having multiple classes at your race event is pretty much what you have to do because if you guess wrong on two of your four classes, you're in big trouble.
Exactly.
But if you guess wrong on two of your six or eight classes, well, you know,
you're okay.
We can sweep the schedule around and whatever. You know, you still got lots of material.
It really is interesting that what's happened to the 600s, they've gotten so crazy expensive.
Yeah, just a little, it's $50 more, and you can do it on a 1000.
Exactly, right? It's just, it's...
I think what's really going on is that the middle of the field
mm-hmm.
can't afford to go racing in the economy that we have.
Right.
Right. The,
okay.
The Ed Sorbels and the Bruce Lins and the, you know, all those guys that were racing 250s.
Right.
We all stopped because the next step up from 250s was crazy money more.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, not a lot of, and, you know, less recognition and whatever.
Right. You're racing for 20th instead of 5th.
Yeah. And if you can make the jump to being in the premier class, what's always better to be the premier guys. You don't have to go on track at 8 in the morning, right? Which freaking sucks.
The practice, you know, balls are white.
Yeah, exactly, right? You get the premier time, you get the best TV coverage, blah, 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 blah. If there's a problem in the schedules blowing up because of the weather or
right.
You, that class gets the least disrupted.
If, right.
Right? If you're going to drive halfway across the country to go racing, right?
Right.
You don't want to find out that your 6-lap race has been shortened to 4 laps.
Right.
You want to know that, okay, my 20-lap race was shortened to 18, but those poor fuckers, they only get, right?
Exactly.
You know, and my race went from noon to noon 30. I mean, it's not a big deal.
Right.
Right?
It's not like, oh, we rescheduled you when you're racing on Tuesday.
You know, if you're on practice, if your practice starts at 8 o'clock,
uh-huh.
you need to be at the track at 6.
Yeah.
A minimum, where, and that's when your pit's already set up and everything's all good.
Mm-hmm.
If you got to be at the track at 6, that means getting up at like 4:30 in the morning. That's not conducive to being, you know, having a great day and being at the best.
And especially because that 8 a.m. session is usually for the class that runs at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, well, that's why I'm never interested in going to being in some support class that's in conjunction with like MotoGP, because they got the good schedule for them, and
right.
and they might even be nice to you and want you to be there, but the reality still is
right.
you practice in the morning and race in the end of the day. It's not the same, yada, yada, yada.
Yep.
So,
all right, so take care of the 600 issues. All right.
M1 sounds the same as in 15. So I've been talking about how bad the bike sounded
right.
through all of practice,
mm-hmm.
and now at the last practice test day and then in the races at Qatar, the M1 sounds like it used to sound. They got that figured out. And all the other bikes sound way, way better, but they do still all have a little bit more ragged sound to them than the M1.
I want to talk about the electronics. I know one of our things on our list is rules. The rules that have resulted in this set of electronics packages, I think, were compromise with Dorna, and I think you've gone exactly the wrong way with what you want to do with your rules in terms of driving innovation. And here's why. Okay,
this is Guja's putting his foot in his mouth.
No, this is
attention.
Where's my soapbox?
Yeah.
Hang on. And
low, I'm gonna slam him with
and
this.
And
low,
there
minutes.
Was. No, you used to have the electronics for the MotoGP bikes. Used to be able to adapt to tire wear. Okay, as the tires wore, the electronics would change your traction control settings to give you maximum grip based on how much tire you had left. This is a very practical thing to have in the real world.
Yeah, but they wanted to make the electronics less expensive and less complicated, and that's
right.
a pretty complicated thing that you just described. So they took it away. It's
right.
what Dharma wanted. It's what the teams all agreed to. Where's your complaint?
Because of what they've replaced it with.
Which is something that doesn't cost as much, and it's not as sophisticated.
And it
doesn't. That's what we asked for.
And it doesn't. But it doesn't drive innovation that works in the real world.
Ah, I'm glad you said that.
I want,
because wings are an innovation.
We
don't want wings,
we'll,
do we, Michael?
We'll
no,
get to
that
wings
kind
in a
of
moment.
Innovation is bad.
We'll get to wings in a moment.
You lost.
No.
Yes.
Real world. Do you know how you do it now with traction
Real
control?
World, I need a computer managing my street vehicle
yes.
because my tire wear.
Yes.
My tire's a year old now.
Absolutely.
And I got less grip.
Absolutely.
And I can't.
Because if your TC can handle that, it can handle oil, it can handle water, it can handle a little bit of gravel. That's what you want to drive.
Or, you know, you could just keep your head and eyes level and look
and
through the turn.
All
and stay steady on the throttle.
That's absolutely true. And I've also crashed because I haven't seen oil in a corner, and I wound up scattering myself and my phone across
the 710
freeway.
I'm pretty sure if you run over a significant amount of slippery stuff on the road and there's no traction left, your traction control system can't do anything about that for you. It can take away all the power you want from the back wheel, but when the front end goes whoop and
right.
boom and you fall on the ground, it ain't going to help you.
I'd rather have it on board than not. Do you know
you've got to pay a lot more for that.
That is true. And I'd like
the people that need that stuff are the entry-level riders who aren't paying for it.
Which, if you amortize the cost over a whole bunch of units, gets cheaper. You know how they do track, they do the management now? And this is why you've heard so much in this year, both in MotoGP and in World Superbike, the bike got lost on the track. We've heard it once
at Qatar, and we had heard of it from before.
And we heard it.
I was confused by that because my understanding was you weren't allowed to have corner by corner stuff now. Except you still do.
You can have corner by corner, but you can't use the $4 GPS system. That's way too cost effective now. Here's what you do: the timing loops, the ones that break the track into sections. Your bike recognizes when it goes through one of those, and then it counts the wheel revolutions. And when it counts enough revolutions that it says, now
that doesn't make sense because you're going to have wheel spin. That's bullshit.
It gets you close.
That's what you heard. That's how it gets you close isn't good enough.
All you need to know is when you get back on the gas in third gear, the bike needs to know whether it's in turn 9 or turn 4.
Yeah, but you can't do it by counting wheel turns because you're not always going to get the same number of wheel turns.
You don't have to be exact. All you have to do is when it comes back on. You just need to know you've gone this number of wheel turns past timing loop number 3.
I call bullshit. That's not how they're doing it.
All I know is that you go out there on a MotoGP track a couple of days before the race, and Honda technicians are out there with that little stick in that wheel measuring the distance between the timing loops.
All I know is I know where I'm on the track because I have my eyes open.
Yes, you can do that, but that's not fast.
That's not the recycle bin.
That's right. Again. That's right. The recycle bins around here.
See,
are
my
not
trash
blue.
Cans are blue because I got a whole bunch of blue 5-gallon buckets. And I use 5-gallon buckets as trash cans so I can have 3 of them spread out around the shop so I don't have to go walking to one big trash
can. Even though every other place on the planet.
And when you add up all those steps, it makes a difference over time. Well, then I needed a recycle bin. And it needed to be a different color. And I have one silver can, so I use that for recycle. And because Michael's big can at home is blue
and
for
everybody
recycle,
else on the West Coast
just
is big
cannot
can
handle
blue.
The fact that there's one and place in the world.
You know how you could have counted up the number of steps in here? You could have had Honda engineers come measuring from the timing loops.
What do you call those things you put on your hip that count
your
steps?
Yeah, the pedometers.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
So anyway, that's my point. The rules package right now drives innovation in a way that's absolutely useless in the real world.
Yeah, so it's a class, prototype racing, designed to drive innovation.
Right.
So when it doesn't drive innovation the way you want, you complain.
Correct.
But when somebody invents a really new cool thing that works, you don't like how it looks. And instead of simply stopping there, I don't like how it looks, you come up with bullshit reasons why it should be outlawed.
Just because.
And by the way, I got one more thing I should have mentioned before. People like, oh, they're dangerous, they stick out.
Yes.
How about frame sliders?
I agree.
Fucking stick out.
Yes.
I don't hear any rules about taking frame sliders away. Okay,
so now we're on to the wings issue.
Yes.
Okay. See, your argument is compromised by the fact that you watch not enough car racing.
No, I don't watch any car racing.
And that's your point. So you haven't seen the slightest touch between a rear wheel and a wing wind up in an instant flat on the back of somebody's car.
Well, I've also seen lots of cars touch wheels to wheel and go flying. That's their chosen kind of racing, and their problems don't apply to us.
Oh, they absolutely
and
do.
And here's another thing. Just because some yahoo says that the wings are going to take away downforce from my motorcycle in a corner, whatever. That happens in cars.
Oh, yeah.
But in motorcycles, all you got behind a motorcycle is a big turbulent mess. A motorcycle is not long enough to put the air back together.
But you can make it worse.
It's not going to matter. You don't have downforce on the front of your motorcycle to be taken away. When you make more turbulence, you get a bigger hole in the air and you get more of a draft.
That's not what the riders are saying.
No. One idiot journalist reported what somebody just said off the top of their head, and now people are taking it as fact.
Well,
okay? I didn't see any of the guys following the Ducatis run wide in the corners.
But I did see somebody do exactly what you see in Formula Car racing, which was one Valentino Rossi, who ran down some people when he was in clear air, made plenty of time on them, got behind them, and then couldn't make a pass.
Maybe it was because Valentino Rossi was riding at the limit like he said he was, and he couldn't make a pass.
That is
pathetic evidence.
No, but that's also something that you would see in Formula Car racing a lot. You got to understand, Ed.
Got to understand that a car is like 8 or 10 times bigger than a motorcycle.
I agree.
You're talking about a significantly different aerodynamic situation behind the car than it is behind the motorcycle. It's bullshit.
I'm not sure I call it bullshit. I'm not the guy. Hey, Pedrosa, Smith, and Rossi have all said that their bike...
None of them are aerodynamics experts.
No,
none of them have aerodynamic degrees.
But they're all on the bike, and
all
now
of them
saying,
have problems
right?
that they haven't identified.
Yes.
And they're blaming their aerodynamics.
Mm-hmm. The parallels, dude, the parallels with Formula One are just scary. Nobody complained. Nobody had a problem when they first came out. Excuse me, root beer. And they were small, and they weren't that big a problem. When they got bigger... And they got as the Yamahas have gotten, they're now
The rules don't allow them to be any wider than the fairing.
The foot peg.
What? No, it's the fairing.
Take a look at that thing on the Yamaha.
Read the rule.
It's the foot peg. But as they got bigger,
look, it's prototype racing.
Nobody's,
and wings work.
Nobody
okay?
said anything.
If you don't like them, just because you don't like them, just say that. Don't make up bullshit about claiming that they cause these problems that they don't cause.
I will wrap it up with this then. If you asked the people who run all forms of car racing, if there was one... Listen!
It's irrelevant. Cars don't lean.
No, but you can learn from other people's mistakes. if they could unlearn one thing from history, it would be aerodynamics.
It made the cars faster.
And it ruined racing.
It did not ruin race.
Absolutely.
You know what? They can go watch sports car racing. Oh, those have wings too. They can watch saloon car racing. Oh, those are affected by aerodynamics as well.
Absolutely.
Everything's affected by aerodynamics.
Absolutely.
You want to go race in space?
Nope.
How are you going to make your internal combustion engine run without air?
What you want to do, you get rid of the external wings, you use under car tunnels and slick tires. Mechanical
those are
grip.
Cars. You can't do that on a motorcycle.
Yes, but you can avoid putting... blades on the bikes that make it impossible to get too close behind the other guy. If you want closer racing, you make closer racing, you know? That's my argument.
Your argument is not based on fact.
Of course
so Nikki says that Ten Kate has done more to modify his bike for him than the team he was riding for in MotoGP
that would
did
be
the entire
Aspar.
Time.
Thanks, guys. Duh.
Okay, so who's the source on this?
Nikki.
Okay.
And no, Tancata.
And what do they mean by make changes?
I don't know, to be perfectly
honest. And what restrictions did the MotoGP guys have on the changes that they could make based on their contract?
Way fewer, apparently, than Tancata had. You know, it's one of those things, it's like, if you know you're racing for 10th, you're not going to double your budget to get to 7th. If you're racing for 3rd, you might quadruple the budget to get to 1st. And I sometimes wonder if that's what's really happening in the middle of the pack with those guys at the bike. You hear them. What's his name? Redding talked about the engineer sent him out with on like the number 3 power setting. He had a lack of power at the beginning of his race.
Well, the engineers are human, and there's a lot of ways that you can
screw it up.
There's a lot of buttons to push.
Right, but sometimes I wonder. You know, those guys in the middle of the pack, they're like, hey, if we only do this, I can go a quarter of a second a lap faster, and that would give me, you know, wood. And the team goes, yeah, we're not going to do that to move you from 11th to 10th, you know?
Well, there's some, you got to wonder sometimes what they're getting, right? Let's take Qatar as an example. We saw 5 bikes and then 4 bikes a lot for the whole race.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw Redding twice,
right?
And for crying out loud, the guy was nowhere last year, and now he's battling in 10th, and he even led practice for a little while, and that didn't get him 30 seconds of airtime
right.
that made sure to show his logo and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, MotoGP, you would expect, I mean, they do a great show, and they got a lot of cameras and all that stuff.
I have issues
and
with that too.
They're in the business of promoting themselves. You would think that they would do what NASCAR does and make sure to show the field. Now, granted, NASCAR has a lot more time to work with.
A 400-mile race.
Yeah, right? Well, part of their genius, right?
Right,
make
exactly.
sure everybody gets paid. But, yeah, you got to wonder what the sponsors and the teams are getting sometimes for those guys that are not getting any time on the air.
And if you're like, look, if we can change to the hot motor, I can move, you know, I can move 2 places up the grid.
But
and they're
if
like,
the, if... Okay, so
yeah.
we're assuming what the team is saying.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's true that moving 2 places up on the grid costs you a motor and doesn't get you any benefit, well, then yeah.
Exactly.
Why want to throw away a motor,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, you know?
You know, maybe their benefit is if you go to that store in Waikiki You can ride up the escalator and you can almost touch one of Gardner's 500 GP bikes. It's hanging there.
Okay.
Okay. So whatever that store is, I guess it's the Gardner store. Right? They sell clothes.
Okay.
Okay. They feel that the benefit of having that bike there gets them, that somebody said, okay, it's worth $10 a day or whatever it is.
Right.
Right. And that works for them.
Right.
And it does, and it has nothing to do with how much TV it got.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
So, I mean, there's a lot of ways you might decide, I want to be sponsoring racing, besides just because I fucking want to.
Right.
Which is a great reason.
Exactly. You know? And you can send the checks to motorbikeroadracing.blogspot.com. But they're not going to be changing the motor in that bike hanging in that store, you know?
So Marquez says that he can break as late now on the Michelins as he was on the Stones. I think that has more to do with he was having trouble last year and the bike wouldn't let him break as late. And now they've got the bike working better and therefore, right? It's not just a thing about the tires.
Well, Matt Oxley has a really interesting
And also, point. He's talking about straight up and down. The magic of the Bridgestone, the part that people are like raving about, everybody can make your tire work good when you're straight up and down. It's that you can just keep on braking all the fuck you want while turning as hard as you can. You'd be dragging your knee with the brake lever mushed to the handlebar on carbon brakes. By the way, it was cool seeing the carbon brakes blowing into turn one at Qatar.
Yeah.
God damn.
They were, dude, was it 220 miles?
218 on the
Jesus
freaking.
Christ.
You see the Ducati engineer guy when they're talking, he's like, oh,
exactly. Yeah, smirk. Who's your daddy?
I built that. You know, it's always funny, too. This has always been the case. I remember the first guy to go 200 was one of the Honda test riders.
Shinichi Ito.
And we were all like, it's because he's a little guy. But it's never the A guy on the team that gets the big number. It's like the B guy does a little bit of extra work so he can get the number, right? He knows he's the B guy and he wants to tuck in a little more or whatever
is. You know what? If you're trying new engine stuff, you don't put that on the bike that's in the front of the championship, right?
Yeah,
and it's like,
true.
Hey, you, Ito, we got 12 of you. You try this and see if it blows up, you know? Holy crap. No, the Oxley, I sent that. Oxley has a really interesting column. Some of the riders are talking about the Michelin and how it deforms when you're braking into a corner. How are we on time?
Oh, 27.
Okay,
I was reading the 00 for hours thinking, uh-oh, we got a problem.
We got a problem.
Yeah.
And apparently how, as the Michelin sidewall flexes, you get bigger and smaller contact patches.
Okay, so hang on. So what you're talking about is if you can get an oscillation going in the sidewall of your tire, just like if your suspension is pogoing up and down because there's no oil left in the forks, right? That would mean the tire would squish out and have more contact patch, more traction when it's loaded, and then flex back and have less.
And apparently,
and that could be a real big problem,
right? But apparently, now when you're doing this, when you're braking a MotoGP bike into the corner hard on the brakes, the Michelin goes through an area where first the contact patch is really big, then it gets really small, and then it gets big again. And
if that's happening as you're tipping in, that would explain why guys go, what the fuck happened?
Exactly.
How come I'm on the ground?
Why am I on the ground? Right?
There's a lot going on in a tire's life.
Yeah.
And the construction is hugely important. When you read stuff like, oh, well, we just made this small change to the construction and that clock, blah, blah, blah. When they say small change, that's like when physicists say, you know, we can build a sail that uses solar power to travel across the galaxy. It's just a small engineering problem. When they use the word small in that context, you've got to switch it around. It's like this unbelievably big problem that you're never going to solve, right? So when the guys are like deliberately being British, it's just a wee problem, mate, you know? It's just the German Navy, you know?
It's
or,
just the right,
you know?
And that's why, for the club racer, that's why a lot of the club racers, the run of the mill club racer, can get along better with a tire with the stiffer sidewall just because it's more consistent.
Well, no.
Hold on.
A consistent sidewall. That's the problem you described that Michelin apparently is having is that it changes.
Yeah.
If your sidewall is always flexible like a Pirelli, there's some people that
I'm
don't like that, but there's
there.
Plenty of people that get along fine with it.
I'm getting there.
You just take too long.
the middle of the road guy gets along better with the stiffer sidewall because it's more consistent when they're being ham-fisted on the brakes, the throttle, as we do when we're not at the top. But I've noticed a lot of the guys that are absolutely at the top of the heap at various clubs have no problem with the Pirellis because they can work their way through that flex. And they get everything out of the Pirelli because that flex gives you something extra, which is some side grip at a place where a lot of places tires don't have side grip.
So the thing, so the difference between you're calling the average club guy and somebody who's like a pro is that a pro recognizes, because a pro's always doing the same thing, okay? So then when the pro, you know, let's say he goes from a Dunlop to a Pirelli,
right?
So then there's all this extra flex.
Right.
And the pro goes, oh, okay, this tire flexes more.
Right.
Whereas the guy you're describing goes, oh, this is different. I don't know what to do.
Right.
Oh, I'm not happy.
Exactly.
Oh, fuck. Of course it's not going to work.
Right. You're the average club racer guy. You're not on the track 8 times a week. You're not doing it
all
the time. It's
mental. You don't have to be on the track 8 times a week.
And you can't feel the same
thing.
You
can.
Well, if you got better at it, but you're not. All right. Hey, we're almost done. I have something. I had a 2-minute board, but I'm going to change it because of something you said earlier. Oh, no. You can actually see new wrinkles on Ed's forehead when I say that. The, where was I going? Right. I knew this. Still the off season. We're not getting racing every weekend, so I still got to watch old racing. And I'm watching the transatlantic match races from the late 1970s. The British would bring some American riders over, and then they'd have these team races, right?
The transatlantic matches was a team event
right.
where a bunch of British guys would come over here race, then a bunch of Americans would go to England and race.
When did they race here?
They never came here?
I don't think so.
Americans going over there?
I think so. Because they were over there a lot of them were over there anyway for GPs.
And so they had a team scoring system.
Right, right.
And it was really popular when it happened the first time. And they tried to bring it back and it kind of didn't really work.
Right.
And then people keep talking about how cool it was. But remember, part of the reason that it was so cool was that it was accessible. They had a TV package when a lot of other racing didn't have a TV package. So a lot of people saw it.
And you could buy a TZ750. One TZ750, tune it the best you could. It was legal to race anywhere in the world.
Well, yeah, there were a lot of things that were
different. Yeah, you know.
So, anyway, you were going on about this.
Well, everybody's talking about how great the MotoGP TV package is. I'm looking at this shit from the 70s, and I can't remember if it's Roger Burnett or Ron Haslam, but they've got a lipstick camera on the axle of the bike shooting forward. They've got one behind his
foot.
Yeah,
but it wasn't live.
No. It was, I don't know if it was live or not, okay?
We never watched any of that stuff live back then.
Well, okay, but the point is they had all the cameras and all the angles. Well, raving about the MotoGP.
And that's another reason that coverage, that was good. That was way better than the normal amount of coverage.
Yeah.
But it wasn't live. MotoGP is doing it live. They've got 4 cameras on every bike this year.
Mm.
You know, they've got the helicopter view. They got all that. It's just they're not doing the NASCAR thing of showing everybody, which I think is in their interest. They should do it.
I
totally want to see every single guy in the field, and especially when, you know, you're recording everything.
Right.
It's not like I can't see
like it's going to cost them any extra to do it. I get it. I'd rather have a little bit less of the on-screen gizmos and the data and all that other crap.
I could do without any more of that slow-mo shit.
Yeah, you know? Really? And I'd like to see what's going on at the back of the field.
Yeah, I love it the way it is. I think the announcers are doing a great job. I just want to see down the field farther. Those guys deserve to have their sponsors get a little love,
too. How many times is Brottle going to throw the bike away just so we can get on camera?
Yeah, exactly. Stop doing that. It shouldn't be the case that your only coverage is when you freaking crash. Come on.
A pit board. It says down in 3. We got a really good camera shot from there. Hey, I think we're out of time. He's Ed Sorbo.
He's Michael Gugis.
Aloha.